Reading from Sino Bhort, Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 17, 10 and 11. It's quite a lengthy purport. So, since there's no board, I just repeat the verses, unless you've got them on the phone or something. Okay. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O chaste one, the king's good name, duration and life, and good rebirth vanish when all kinds of living entities are terrified by the miscreants in his kingdom. 'Tis certainly the prime duty of the king to subdue the first sufferings of those who suffer. Therefore, I must kill this most wretched man because he is violent against other living beings. Purport. When there is some disturbance caused by wild animals in a village or town, the police or others take action to kill him. Similarly, it is the duty of the government to kill at once all bad social elements such as thieves, dacoits, and murderers. The same punishment is also due to animal killers, because the animals of the state are also the praja. Praja means one who has taken birth in the state, and this includes both men and animals. Any living being who takes birth in a state has a primary right to live under the protection of the king. The jungle animals are also subject to the king, and they also have the right to live. So what to speak of domestic animals, like the cows and bulls? Any living being, if he terrifies another living beings, is such a wretched subject, and the king should at once kill such a disturbing element. As a wild animal is killed when it creates some disturbances, similarly any man who unnecessarily kills or terrifies the jungle animals or other animals must be punished at once. By the law of the Supreme Lord, all living beings, in whatever shape they may be, are the sons of the Lord, and no one has any right to kill another animal unless it is ordered by the codes of natural law. The tiger can kill a lower animal for his sustenance, but a man cannot kill an animal for his sustenance. That is the law of God, who has created this, who has created the law that a living being subsists by eating another living being. Thus the vegetarians are also living by eating another living being. Therefore, the law is that one should live only by eating specific living beings as ordained by the law of God. The Upanishad directs that one should live by the direction of the Lord and not by one's sweet will. A man can subsist on varieties of grains, fruits, and milk ordained by God, and there is no need for animal food, except in particular cases. The illusion king or executive head, even though sometimes advertised as a great philosopher, a learned scholar, will allow slaughterhouses in the state without knowing that torturing poor animals clears the way to hell, for such foolish kings or executive heads. The executive head must always be alert to the safety of the prajas, both men and animal, and inquire whether a particular living being is harassed at any place by any other living being. The harassing living being must be at once be caught and put to death, as shown by Maharaj Parikshit. The people's government, or government by the people, should not allow killing of innocent animals by the sweet will of foolish government men. They must know the code of God as mentioned in the revealed scriptures. Maharaj Parikshit quotes here that according to the codes of God, the irresponsible king or state executive jeopardizes his good name, duration of life, power and strength, and ultimately a progressive march towards a better life and salvation after death. Such foolish men do not even believe in the existence of the next life. Well, commenting on this particular verse, we have in our presence a statement of a great modern politician who recently died and left his will, which discloses his poor fund of knowledge of the code of God mentioned by Maharaj Parikshit. The politician was so ignorant of the code of God that he writes, "I do not believe in any such ceremonies and submit to them, even as a matter of form, would be hypocrisy and attempt to delude ourselves and others. I have no religious sentiment in this matter." Contrasting these statements of the great politician of the modern age with those of Maharaj Parikshit, we find a vast difference. Maharaj Parikshit was pious according to the scriptural codes, whereas the modern politician goes by his personal belief and sentiments. Any great man of the material world is, after all, a conditioned soul, and he is bound by his hands and feet by the ropes of material nature. And still, the foolish conditioned soul thinks himself as free to act by his whimsical sentiments. The conclusion is that the people at the time of Maharaj Parikshit were happy, and animals were given proper protection because of the executive head was not a whimsical or ignorant of God's law. Foolish, faithless creatures try to avoid the existence of God, of the Lord, and proclaim themselves secular at the cost of valuable human life. Human life is especially meant for knowing the science of God, but the foolish creatures, especially in this age of Kali, instead of knowing God scientifically, make propaganda against religious belief as well as the existence of God. Even though they are always bound by the laws of God, by the symptoms of birth, death, old age, and disease. Om Gyanara Nasya Ganaslakaya Tatsumina Tasmai Sri Gare Namaha. I was born a daughter in Sri, my spiritual master, mind the taught the transcendental knowledge. Jai. So, this purport, the essence is actually is protection. Protection for all of it, animals and human beings. And especially for those, like the animals, they should be protected because, as it says in the purport, they are part of the kingdom. And so ultimately the human beings, they also are protected, but how are they protected? The devotees and the conditioned souls, how are they protected? First of all, the devotees are protected if they, according to the Bhagavad Thakur, in the six symptoms of Saganagrati. Saganagrati means surrender. So these six divisions are acceptance of those things favorable to bhakti, rejection of unfavorable things, conviction that Krishna will give protection, acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master, maintainer, fully self-surrendered, and humility. So, according to the Acharyas, that the third one, the third and fourth, conviction that Krishna will give protection and acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master or maintainer, are the most important ones. Then everything else, the other four, they follow automatically. So, to know Krishna as one protector, we have many examples. So, we know that Draupadi, when she was dragged by her hair in the Mahabharat, and someone, I forget now, tried to disrobe her. Yeah. And so originally she chanted the name Krishna, Krishna, but she held on to her sari, but with one hand. But she realized this was a helpless situation, that it wasn't holding on to the sari, wasn't helping. So she completely let go and raised both her hands and shouted Krishna, Krishna. And then the unlimited sari came. So from that we can learn, while chanting the name of Krishna, if we're holding on to something as dear as the sari in our heart, Krishna will not help us. We have to fully surrender to Krishna. And this this surrender is epitomized by Lord Caitanya, as we wonderfully heard from Prajna Prabhu the other day, that Lord Caitanya is the crest jewel of all renunciation. He renounced his Godhead, and he came as a devotee to show us by personally how to surrender to Krishna. So in his Sastakam prayers, he writes, Alasya
Lasyava parabratam panasyamam adashanam manam hatam karatuva yatata varate lampado mat pranam namatrastu sa eva napraha. I know one but Krishna as my Lord, and he shall remain even if he handles me roughly by his embrace, or makes me broken-hearted by not being present before me. He is completely free to do anything and everything, for he is always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. So this is God incarnate as a devotee saying that surrender should be unconditional, complete unconditional. Even if he can treat me ever he wants, treats me roughly or treats me nicely, it doesn't matter. He's still my Lord. So surrender means that we have to surrender to a sadhu or a bona fide spiritual master who is self-realized. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, where is it now? Yeah. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 8, we know. Paritaraya sudanam vashana jadiskakam dharma samparo tatya sambambade yuge. To deliver the pious and annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So, we cannot surrender to Krishna directly, as Arjuna did in the Bhagavad Gita. But we have to surrender to a bona fide guru or sadhu, Vaishnava sadhu. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, according to the Bhagavad Gita, a sadhu, or a holy man in brackets, is a man in Krishna consciousness. A person may be irreligious, but if he has the qualification of Krishna consciousness wholly and fully, he is to be understood to be a sadhu. And also, so this is a sadhu that he is fully, he is man in Krishna consciousness, and he is fully surrendered to Krishna. And this surrender means also that, as I said, as Lord Titania has said, not me, but Lord Titania has said, how whatever Krishna wants, how he treats me. Now, highest example of this is in, where is it now? Yeah. So, surrender can generally, if it's not complete surrender, as I've often heard said, and I repeat it to myself, that if it's not complete surrender, it's either conditional, artificial, or partial. And of course, the Bhagavad Gita also says that we that if we have to surrender to Krishna, Krishna says, doesn't he, we have to just surrender unto me and give up all Vedic Dharma or Dharma, and do not fear, for shall I protect you? Do not fear. So the example, now the example is that we can follow the example of the devotees who are completely surrendered. And the best and highest example is the gopis, of course, because they are the best example to give. So in it says in the this is from some years ago, before you go on the Navadvip Pandal Parakram, they give you a little booklet of sastras and the 10 offenses against holy dharm. So it says in the book, it's under this section, complete surrender. It said the gopis had forsaken everything for the sake of rendering loving service to Krishna, and for the sake of giving all pleasure and enjoyment to the senses of Krishna, they render loving service to him only for his enjoyment. That is firm attachment to Lord Krishna, anurag. It is spotlessly pure, like a clean cloth that has no stain. Thus, it is not the slightest tinge of lust in the gopi's love. Their relationship with Krishna is always for the sake of his enjoyment. And the gopis do not care for their own pleasures or pain. All their physical and mental activities are directed towards offering enjoyment for Lord Krishna. They renounce everything for Krishna. They have pure attachment attachment to giving Krishna pleasure. Okay. Where's it now? So also, now in the Bhagavad Gita, same chapter 4, verse 8, Krishna is, this is, now I'm going to read a little section from this purport, which seems it's saying the opposite. In what I've just read, the gopis are fully surrendered to give Krishna happiness. So in this purport, it says, where is it now? Oh yes, here it is, yeah. There are different kinds of avatars, such as Purusha avatars, Guna avatars, Vina avatars, Shaktivesha avatars, Manavajava avatars, and Yuga avatars. On appearing on the schedule, scheduled all over the universe. But Lord Krishna is the primeval Lord and the fountainhead of all avatars, Tataras. Lord Krishna descended for a specific purpose in migrating the anxieties of the pure devotees. You are very anxious to see him in his original Vrindavan pastimes. Therefore, the prime purpose of Lord Krishna, the Krishna avatar, is to satisfy his unalloyed devotees. So it's complete opposite. So how do we link these two together? We link them together when we see, when the pure devotees see Krishna is satisfied. Krishna, he gets satisfaction. And when he gets satisfaction, when that pure devotee sees that Krishna is getting satisfaction, his satisfaction increases. And so on like that. And when Krishna sees the satisfaction of the increasing satisfaction of that pure devotee, Krishna's satisfaction increases. Like this, back and forward like this. So this is that sure protection, that we just take shelter of the pure devotee, full surrender, and then whatever happens in our material life or spiritual life, somehow or other, is ordained by our karma generally. So whatever happens, we have to surrender to the pure devotee, and then that pure devotee, because he's the representative of God, because he's God's representative, we then just have to accept it, that it's, I am getting purified, I am getting a token reaction for many past lives, sinful activities. And Krishna is very, very merciful, and therefore he's given me a token karma. And so therefore we have to accept it, and then once we accept it, and then Krishna will protect us. Now I'll go back to a little bit, back a bit. Why disrobing of Draupadi, that in one time Krishna was in Dwarka, and this shows how Krishna says also in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna reciprocates according to one's surrender and how you call him. So one time Krishna was in Dwarka. He was taking is in one of his palaces, and he was taking some meal, some bishadam, offered by one of the queens. And then halfway through the meal, bishadam, Krishna, he just gets up and leaves. Just gets up and leaves. And then he comes back. So then, when he comes back, that queen asked him, "Oh, my lord, my good husband, best, why did you leave? You were taking your foodstuffs, your bishadam." He said, "My devotee was calling me, so I had to go, because they were in some difficulty." Yes, but I've heard this before. Yes, I've heard this before. You know, I've heard your devotees call you, and sometimes you go, and most of the times you don't go. You wait till later. Says yes. When they say, "Oh Bhagavan, Bhagavan, help me, help me," I wait a little bit. But when they call my name, Krishna, Krishna, I go immediately. So it's according to one's relationship with Krishna, and then how Krishna acts. So according to our relationship with Krishna, then Krishna will act and protect us. Also, there's another how Krishna protects in the Bhagavatam. We heard of Jad Bharat. We know Jad Bharat. So we know he was previous life. He was Bharat Maharaj, and because of his attachment to a baby deer, he took a deer's body. But even the deer's body, he was not associating with the other deers. He was going to the ashram of his guru and listening to topics about Krishna, even though he's in the deer's body. So the next birth is Jad Bharat. So one day there were some dacoits wanted to sacrifice something to Ma Kali. And so they saw him. So they saw him and they thought, "This is a perfect sacrifice for Ma Kali." So they kidnapped him and they were about to cut his head off in front of Ma Kali. But Ma Kali is actually a devotee of Krishna, and she recognized, "Oh, this is one of my lord's devotees," and she jumped out from the murti, and she actually killed all the dacoits. So this is also how Krishna protects the devotees. So, and of course, the best protection for devotees is at all times is to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare Hare. Right. Now, yes, because it's generally it's the month of the book distribution, and so yesterday someone sent me a very, very nice Sankirtan book distribution pastime. This is from one devotee in Hungary, by his name is Bhagavat Priyadas, and it is called Jesus is on Our Side. I'll start from the top. Jesus is on our side from a devotee who is disputing Bhagavad Gita and other books in Hungary. I was going door to door, and a lady opened her door and showed me, and I showed her books. She invited me in and said, she would get me a donation for me. I was astounded at what I saw in her house. It was a beautiful picture of Jesus Christ, 2.5 meters high, about 7 foot tall. I was awed, it was so nice. And the lady returned and saw me appreciating the picture. She said, I think you will understand what I'm going to tell you since you like this picture so much. 2 years ago, Jesus came to me in a dream and said, you should be a vegetarian, otherwise you won't be able to understand God. I was shocked that he came in a dream and instructed me in that way. But it was clear, so I became a vegetarian. Then 3 days ago, he came to me again and said, in 3 days, a monk is coming to you with books. Take them. And now here you are, right on time. And she brought all the books I had. I was so happy to hear this, that Jesus was. So this is only one pastime of the Sankirtan devotees. I'm sure there's a lot more because of the Goldrum has got loads when he's doing door to door, and he's got loads, and other devotees have. So we can see. Because also Jesus is also a Shakti Vaish avatar, devotee of Krishna. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Comments?
So that lady, she became a devotee?
I don't know. So she's just... We'll have to contact the devotees. We'll have to somehow get in contact and ask if there's some follow-up afterwards. Because there should be some follow-up afterwards.
Thank you, Krishna. Thank you for your class, Prabhu. I had a question. You were talking about, you referenced the nine processes of, no, not nine processes, but the process of Sharanagati, I think the six.
Yeah, the six, yeah. Items. Yeah.
Yeah, items of Sharanagati. Yeah. I just wanted to ask, how does that transition happen for us? Like, what happens when, you know, you get to this stage of surrender? Is it that something changes internally, with how you do your actions and things, or is it that you still carry on the same but with a different lens, or what should we be expecting as we're trying to reach this goal, and how do we do that best?
First of all, it all depends on the individual. Because we're individual, and if we really be serious, and we sometimes people, when they hear this word surrender, it seems a very harsh word to them, doesn't it? You know, you have to surrender. You know, yes. But if we apply it immediately, if we're serious and apply it immediately. But then we just have to apply it, that's all. We just have to do it.
It's that simple. It's just a matter of faith. It's just a matter of faith. Just do it. But some of us just drag our heels, and they find it difficult to do. So we just have to do it. Just like Draupadi did, after she realized, no, holding on to a sari was no good. She still realized her clothing was going to come off. She was powerless. She couldn't do anything. She just had to let go, and she just had faith, and then Krishna provides unlimited. It's a matter of faith and just applying it.
Just on that point, I was just reading the introduction to Shivaram Maharaj's new book, and he mentions this about applying. He says that the way to surrender is when you're attentive in your spiritual practice, then you experience Krishna more, and then that. So attentiveness is one of the key aspects when we're attentive and apply the spiritual practice fully and sincerely.
Yeah, attentiveness. Yeah.
It's an interesting thing. Surrender comes usually, anyway for me, is the pain. When I don't surrender, in other words, it comes from authority. No matter where authority is, you have to know who your authority is. Even though you don't agree, you have to do it, and it can be quite painful. But if you do, if you don't follow it, you suffer.
Yes.
Because authority has been put in a position, usually not by your arrangement, but by Krishna's arrangement.
Yeah.
And we can, and that's the thing we should think, that whatever authority we have, that's Krishna's representative. And we may not agree, and we can ask questions, but ultimately we have to do what they say. And that can be very painful. But if we don't, and we think, we just suffer. But not only that, we never know what Krishna's will is for us. We'll be, if we follow, we'll know what Krishna's will is.
Yeah.
And best to know whether we agree, disagree, under the modes of material nature, we should try to follow authority, no matter what.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I know, I can understand, because when I was, some years ago, when Sukadev was, then he was called Vice President, we had one visiting sadhu from Vrindavan, and it was in the middle of winter, and he wanted, this is in the Vaikuntha room, Vaikuntha room. He wouldn't walk on carpet. So I had to go in there. He said, I want you to serve this sadhu from India and do whatever he wants. So then he said, I don't want to like walk on carpet. So I had to get some sheets of they call them those plastic sheets of something, and put them on the floor, and then he wouldn't even take bath in the shower. This is the middle of winter in the old Torsi greenhouse, his servant with two. There's a tap on the side there, wasn't there? You take water, cold water from there and take a bath that way. And now he got his bishadam. And I didn't like to do it, the service, but Sukadev told me to do it. So then he left after a week, and now I was glad, in one sense, he left, But then the next visit to Vrindavan, 2 years later, I was going down to, what is it now? Radharaman Temple, on the rickshaw. And then, I saw the same sadhu come out at some other temple, and he said something in Brijbhasa, and the rickshaw wala stopped. And because he said, "I remember you. You served me in the manor, didn't you?" He said, Yes, Maharaj, I did. Yes. He said, "You served me nicely. I know you didn't like to do it, but you served me nicely. Please come into the temple and take some Mahabhishad." So we may not to do things nicely, but if we do it, Krishna sees it and he reciprocates. Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you very much for your wonderful class. I have a question, maybe it's a silly question, but it's counterproductive to what Prabhuji mentioned. Yes is that you have to follow authority.
Yeah.
And what if you are completely following authority? But what if Krishna also gives us intelligence? So if we don't use our intelligence and become completely dependent on authority, then are we also not surrendering to Krishna's plan, because sometimes he wants us to use our intelligence?
Generally, we should follow the authority, generally. But sometimes, as you say, sometimes we don't agree with the authorities. But we should still generally follow what the authorities say. If we might not like doing it, we should still generally follow it. If we do follow it, if we don't like it and we do follow it, then Krishna sees in the heart, and he knows, and then if that authority is, say, wrong, if it's not right, then Krishna will generally make the readjustment.
So we can be fully dependent on authorities.
Yeah. If they make some mistake, because they are, they are conditioned souls, and we got four defects, and one of them is we're trying to make mistakes. So we should still follow them. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Haribo.
Hare Krishna. Just wanted to add to the point. Sometimes when we're progressing in our devotional service in ISKCON, we don't have just one authority. Guru is one authority, GBC is one authority, Sankirtan leader, temple president, Siksha Guru especially. So it's we're not alone with just one authority, because there's so many decisions to make, so many things that need to be considered. And so it's best in the situation when you have a temple authority telling you to do something, You also take advice from your spiritual master and your Siksha Guru. And if they, if you don't agree, they can also communicate with each other, amongst each other, and make a decision that's probably better for you.
Yeah.
We can't 100% surrender unless it's our own spiritual master. But any other authority, it's a little bit more leeway, like that.
Yeah, so that's what I meant. If there is some mistake, then Krishna will make the adjustment, as you said, through the spiritual master or the Siksha Gurus. Yeah, they make some adjustment. Yes, see ya.
Just on that point, when we do the Guru Disciple course, and they talk about Guru Pradashaya, and they give the Siksha Guru on an equal level with the
Diksha Guru,
As you know, as being non-different from you know, the main Guru, Lord Nityananda, then how do we know? How can we discriminate on who's to follow and who's to get leeway from? Or ideally, shouldn't they all be giving us the same kind of information, because you know we're working with all of them as our predominating guru in that sense?
I just said there's no difference between the Diksha Guru. One should always fully respect the Diksha Guru and the Siksha Guru on the same level. Now there's a slight difference that the Diksha Guru will give you initiation and give you the initiation in the holy name. But the Siksha Guru, he's generally, sometimes with the Diksha Guru, he seems very because he's our guru, so he's like a bit back. We can't get close to him as we would like. But the Siksha Guru, this is one book I read. The Siksha Guru, we still have the same respect for an equal respect, but he's more friendly. He's more approachable. So the Siksha Guru is, and then through him, he gently gives instructions on devotional service, the Siksha Guru. Of course, the Diksha Guru can also, but generally the Siksha Guru, he gives more instructions on devotional service. Okay. Anything else? Anything? No? Okay. Shiva Patam ki jai.